喂呀哟，喂呀呀哟，喂呀哟。
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Nesky. The late afternoon sun scattered in the waters of the Snake River, and the river people danced. Each of the 200 men beat his own drum and formed a semicircle around the white men from the east, who sat in a river camp, nodding their approval. Some of the white men continued to work, unloading their canoes and cooking the dog meat. The river people danced, and their dance was a prayer. For there had been many prophecies of the coming of a different kind of man, and this man would bring wealth and new ways, but would also usher in an era of terrible chaos and destruction. It was October 16, 1805. Lewis and Clark had arrived at the confluence of the Columbia and Snake Rivers. They camped in an area known today as Sacajawea State Park near Pasco, Washington. Great numbers of people came there to gather and preserve the fall salmon. These were the people of the river. Clark called them Sokulks. Today they are called the Wanapum, one of the many tribes in the densely populated Columbia Basin. The Yakima, Klickitat, Palouse, and dozens of other tribes formed an interrelated continuity of people sharing similar beliefs and lifestyles. Clark noted that the river people seemed to live in a state of comparative happiness. Men and women shared equally in the work. They venerated the elderly, and they lived in peace with their neighbors. In the Wanapum village of Panah, on the banks of the Columbia, the river people danced. It was 30 or 40 years later. They danced in a tule mat longhouse to a new prophecy brought by a visionary who had died and returned to life. He was called Smohalla, the dreamer. In his journey, he had learned a new way called Washini, and he taught it to his small band of followers. He said that the Indian should never cut his braids and should always eat traditional foods and continue the vision quest. He said, "Men who work cannot dream, and wisdom comes to us in dreams." And then he showed the people his dance, and he taught them the new songs. In this way, Smohalla fought the influence of the missionaries and government officials who wanted to make the Indian give up the old ways and become farmers. Smohalla said, "You ask me to cut grass and make hay and sell it and be rich like white men, but how dare I cut off my mother's hair?" The Washini way spread from camp to camp across the Columbia Basin to the Rocky Mountains. When the Indian Wars raged in the late 1800s, Smohalla refused to support them. The Washini was a way of peace. In the Treaty of 1855, 14 tribes north of the Columbia were forced to cede 11 million acres to the U.S. government and were confined to the 1.21 million acre Yakima Reservation in south central Washington. Under Smohalla's influence, the Wanapum disregarded the treaty. To this day, they live in their home village site in a small group of houses called Priest Rapids. Representatives of the 14 tribes make up the Yakima Tribal Council. The Yakima Indian Nation co-manages the Columbia and its tributaries in the region. Salmon continue to be the lifeblood of the nearly 8,400 Yakima tribal members. The Washini faith has evolved into what is now called Washit, Seven Drums, or the Longhouse religion. Washit is celebrated each Sunday in longhouses and Priest Rapids and throughout the Northwest. Though many of the river people cut their hair and wear white men's clothes, the drums of Smohalla still ring over the waters of the Columbia, and the river people dance. I'm Arlie Nesky, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Yakima Elder Russell Jim has traveled the globe watching indigenous people from around the world struggle to retain their identity and traditions. A board member for the Center for World Indigenous Studies, Jim has learned that in order to save a culture, one can't sit idly by. One must intervene. For today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull has more.
One of nine children, Russell Jim grew up in Yakima Territory near Toppenish, Washington, along the Yakima River. He learned early on that the course of life is much like a river. People either go with the flow or against the current. Yet, when he was much younger, he was swept away in the waves of Indian children, taken from their families and placed into government boarding schools.
When I came home from the Chemawa Indian boarding school, I described the horror stories to my aunt. And she went to my father and said, "You can send the rest of your children back to that school if you want to. This one is not going." And she said, "If he has to go to school, you find a place close by here where I can watch him. If you do not, I'll take him to the hills and you'll never find us."
Besides helping him escape the hardships of boarding school, Jim's aunt also shared all she could of the Yakima ways.
While I was being raised by my aunt, as I say, we'd travel horseback or by wagon. And we lived between Toppenish and Wapato along the Yakima River. And the closest longhouse was in Wapato, so we'd go there on Sunday mornings. And we'd pull in, and there'd be other wagons and horses there. And eventually, once in a while, you'd see a pickup and maybe a truck. And when you went in, the longhouse was full every Sunday. And he listened to this great orations by people, great songs. Many of those songs are not here anymore because the elders took it with them because some of the younger generations just didn't learn them. These songs are so sacred. When you sing them, you communicate directly with your maker because that's where these songs came from.
In his lifetime, Jim has seen some parts of Yakima traditional life forgotten or neglected. He says it's time now to help young people reconnect with their heritage.
As we say, without my past, I have no future. And our theme here among the Yakima is that we vow to preserve and protect this land and its resources for those children yet unborn. That's our oath of life. People think this is a North American saying, but it isn't. It's from Kenya, and they say, "You do not inherit this land from your ancestors. It is loaned to you by your children." And I think that's profound. It's similar to our thinking. But our religion remains intact. Our culture remains basically intact. But we are going to lose it if the younger generation do not start speaking the language and understanding it. The earth cannot hear you if you do not speak to the earth with your native tongue through the foods and medicines. And the animals understand you. They had vowed when the Creator said, "I am going to make human beings here now, but I need someone to help sustain their life, their bodies, their hearts. And I'm asking you, the first people, if you will help take care of them," which will mean giving your bodies, your life, to them. And the first to speak up was the fish, the salmon. The next was the deer, then the elk, then the food out of the ground, and then the berries. And that's why in our feasts we set the food in that order. And there was a time when, as in a communion in our first foods feasts, we're told as the food is set before us, and before anyone else eats, we're told, "When I name this food, you take a small portion and eat it." Which we would do, and an elder would stand up and said, "This portion of food is going to this part of your body."
Jim's other mission is keeping the land and its people healthy. Some tribal members fear that the nearby Hanford nuclear plant has hurt the salmon run in the Columbia River and the well-being of the Yakima Nation. Jim says more than 30 years ago, he began to suspect a link between the Hanford plant and higher rates of rheumatoid arthritis among his people.
And during my work here on the Hanford Reservation, I was called by a doctor out of Tennessee and asked if I was the guy that was making this statement. I said yes, and he said, "Well, I want you to know that he studied mining operations, every type of mining operations for years, and he found that uranium causes a malady very similar to rheumatoid arthritis. But even before that, by 1976 and 77, I suspect that many of our problems came out of Hanford because of the releases, although they denied there was any major releases out of Hanford.
Releases, which the Washington State Department of Health says include leakage from radioactive waste holding tanks, discharges of chemicals into the air, and the release of river water that was used to cool hot reactor cores back into the Columbia River Basin.
In 77, in fact, I went to the Indian Health Service and asked for their assistance. And I was told in April of 77 that because of no proof that anything came out of Hanford, the Indian Health Service could not help.
Jim says in 1986, the Yakima Nation became the only tribe to help pen the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, which determined where to keep all the high-level waste. While Hanford was among nine places proposed, the tribe convinced energy officials to exclude Hanford as a storage option.
But in late February and early March of 1986, the DOE was forced to release 19,000 reclassified documents. And so upon review, they had to admit that there was a tremendous amount of releases into the system, into the environment. Not only 8 million curies of radioactivity a year going into the Columbia River, but 340,000 curies of iodine-131 released into the air in 1945 alone. And in 1946, there were 76,000 curies.
Jim is focusing his remaining years on preserving natural resources and instilling tribal youth with interest and respect for their Yakima traditions. While he was spared having his culture wrested away from him by the early 20th century boarding school system, he doesn't want others to lose theirs through apathy. He notes that for everything the Yakima Nation went through, the tribe's spiritual beliefs have endured.
And I find it late in life, realizing what my father used to tell me, look at yourself once in a while, observe yourself, talk to yourself once in a while. You don't have to be crazy to talk to yourself. And when you eventually understand what he means, you begin to realize, you know, my golly, you know, I wonder what I look like in the eyes of other people. Do I act arrogant, you know, and they know all this. And so you become very careful. But that also means you become respectful. We prevail with dignity and integrity much better than a lot of people in this country, as few as we are, in fact.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Acting News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Speaking Native, linguist Don Addison teaches us an essential Yakima phrase. In Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehurst Skelton looks at environmental issues surrounding the toxic Hanford nuclear facility. In Tribal Rhythms with Nico Wind, we'll get a rare glimpse into the Shakers and their music. And in Health and Healing, Rose Hybear introduces us to two Yakima women who are dealing with diabetes and helping others to do the same. This is Wisdom of the Elders.